Welcome to another edition of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com. Torn by Sports, local teams, local coverage, real fans. I am Alan Zog, the Jedi. And on the other side, John English, the Germs guy. How are you, John?
Top of the morning to you, Alan.
Ah, going a little Irish on this day. Well,
I wore green today. Yep. I have kids.
All right. I wore a little green. We have a special guest with us tonight. We'd like to welcome Aaron Falk, Utah Jazz beat writer for the Salt Lake Tribune. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thanks for the invite, guys. Appreciate it.
You bet. And did you celebrate anything for the special green day?
No, you know, I'm not opposed to it by any means. I've done things, but this year, just on a Tuesday in between work and everything, I didn't do anything. I mean, and I don't have kids, so I don't have to, I didn't even wear green. I didn't even think about it. I'm a jerk. I'm that guy.
And no one in the office gave you a hard time about it?
You assume I go into the office ever.
Oh, yeah. All right.
No one, my dog did not care. It was fine.
Fine. Rub it in that you sit probably in your pajamas all day long and just chill at home. I get it. It's okay.
I try to put on pants when I go to practices and shoot arounds and all of that. But one of the perks of the job is there are moments you are afforded to work from home, and so that's a nice thing. I mean, it can be a burden too. I'd probably be more productive in different situations, but it's nice. I do enjoy it.
John, you have anything to say to this?
I want to start off with just kind of giving us the idea of what duties between you and Tony Jones, who does what and how do you coordinate on who's doing what in the coverage of the Jazz?
Yeah, so this is the first year that this is only my second year, and Tony's first beat, and this is the first year the Tribune really split up coverage and had two Jazz beat writers. So it's still a work in progress in a lot of ways. I mean, there's really nothing, really scientific about it, in terms of what we're doing. It's just kind of, Tony and I talk on a couple times a week about things we think we should do, and, try to just split the load in terms of travel, which is really the big thing. I mean, I kind of fell into this job a little bit, and the travel was not necessarily something that excited me in a lot of ways. Like, I don't get me wrong, it's been just a ridiculously awesome adventure in a lot of ways, but you get really grinded down. This is me whining, but in airports and waking up so you can be somewhere for a 6 a.m. flight and that sort of a thing, and missing things back home, that stuff. So I was very, very grateful to have Tony and my bosses be interested in splitting up the travel, and really all we've done with that is it's, you look at it and it's basically almost every other trip. With some exceptions that Tony will go. I mean, he's going to LA and Golden State this week, and I'm coming off of was the last trip, the East Coast trip. I went to Philly and New York and dealt with the storm on the East Coast. We do it that way, and then when it comes to coverage, game stories, things like that, it's just me and Tony hashing it out. Kind of how. How I feel, and there's definitely some things we need to iron out, but it's been a pretty good learning experience, and I think a good run at it the first year.
How long you been doing it now, Aaron? This is your what?
This is only my second season with the Jazz.
Okay,
covering the Jazz.
That's right.
So Before that, I covered RSL for almost an entire Major League Soccer season, which is almost a calendar year. Before that, I did crime and courts and you know, bloody stuff, gore.
Now you, if I remember correctly, you do some high school sports too, don't you?
I did a lot more when I was covering RSL. I split part of that, my time with RSL covering high school and just various things that they needed me to do. With the Jazz, it's a lot more just the Jazz. I mean, come summertime and you know, when high school football kicks up in the fall, I'll volunteer to help out, you know, while I can for a couple of weeks on some things, because I think there's a lot of fun stuff to do. And I really think that, honestly, it's, you know, it's tough because obviously the Jazz, there's so much more interest in the Jazz and in terms of web traffic and you know, readership, and it's certainly a much more high profile beat, but there's something really beautiful about high school sports in some ways, because you have access to a lot more access to kids and families, and you're telling stories that maybe haven't been, you know, I mean, these guys, you know, at this point, Gordon Hayward's been interviewed by how many hundreds of people, and you know, it certainly can be more difficult to extract things that are new and fresh. Whereas high school, you get a lot of access and you can tell really, really great stories. It's just, you know, at the end of the day, obviously the interest is much higher in the Jazz than what's going on at
right.
Olympus High School.
Jazz are 11-2 since the All-Star break. How would you compare the locker room now to how it was early in the season?
You know, I never really got a bad vibe. And this is not to say I got a bad vibe last year, but I think this year everyone was pretty refreshed and excited, and they knew that, you know, they were going to take some lumps like they did, especially early on. But I think they felt like they were headed in the right direction now. Maybe felt a better sense of purpose. And right now, I mean, it's buzzing. I mean, Gordon Hayward, especially, he's an interesting barometer, I think, just because he really cares about wins and losses. I mean, you know, a lot of these guys are understanding of the process, and certainly they take the losses hard. But I mean, you know, it's just not something that Gordon's had to endure, and he seems to like last year. I thought he took all those losses very personal. I mean, he was the face. He was somebody that, you know, I and Jody and whoever else basically talked to every day, and you could see that kind of wear on him, especially after, you know, 50 plus losses. And this year, it's. From the beginning, it seemed very fresh and upbeat. And right now, you know, it's those guys are cracking jokes. You can't hardly get through some interviews without somebody throwing a towel grenade, right, and dropping it on somebody's head in a post game scrum and that sort of a thing. And you know, they're pretty loose and they're enjoying it. I mean, I think, you know, deep down they're aware that they're not out of the playoffs, but they know that it'll be obviously next to impossible to reach that, but they're stoked and they're having a good time right now.
So you talk about Gordon Hayward, but who's the glue? Who is the guy, the level-headed guy in the locker room that if things go bad is going to be the guy that keeps things together?
You know, I think it's kind of to be determined. I think, I mean, right now I'm a lot of it's probably on Quinn and his staff. I mean, Gordon's more vocal this year than I think he has been, but you really look at it and I mean, at the start of the year, it was probably Steve Novak and to some extent, I mean, Joe Ingles really kind of ingratiated himself and worked his way into, you know, he's a guy in the locker room that's got kind of a joke for everybody and, you know, he's in and out. But you know, I think eventually it will be Gordon fully. You know, I still think that's a role that he's adapting to. But honestly, right now it's a little bit in flux, and really they haven't, you know, since that trade especially, they haven't had to deal with many problem. So we'll see if they, you know, if their fortune changes for any extended stretch to close out the season. But right now, everything's pretty honky dory, right?
Yeah.
I think everyone's just thrilled beyond belief with Quinn Snyder's first year on the job. But I was wondering if you could give us some insight what the assistant coaches are bringing to the team and how they're helping the team improve.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Brad and Alex and Johnny, those are guys that have, you know, had probably more working knowledge of all the players since they were around last year. And they're, you know, it's kind of interesting, I would say, because this is kind of a hodgepodge staff. I mean, obviously, you know, this is not 100% the staff, I think, that maybe Quinn would have picked if it was just, you know, Quinn, you're the coach, pick your staff. I mean, it obviously he's not going to bring back three guys that he had from that were here last year under a different coach. I mean, most likely. So he's, you know, they've kind of, I think they're learning together, even the coaching staff, but you know, nothing that really stands out in terms of, you know, super outrageously unique things that these coaches are doing, but they're all really, really good guys, and they come from good backgrounds. I mean, you think about Brad having, you know, at least at some level, Jerry Sloan in his life, and you think about the Majerus influence on Alex Jensen, and all of the head coaching experience that those guys have, you know, not NBA level, but another level. So there, it's a really interesting dynamic and an interesting staff, and I think, you know, they've done pretty well for themselves. They're young still, and then they're, you know, they seem pretty light with their guys, and they dealt with that 9-game losing streak, I thought, pretty admirably. You know, it's I think it's a work in progress, like I said, but it's been pretty good.
You know, and this is something I've noticed too. It would seem Quinn, you know, and I've always had this belief in the NBA, head coaches are as good as their assistants are. I don't know if you'd agree with that, but in this situation especially, it seems that Quinn, you can tell in games, he relies on his assistants. How many times does he look back at the bench at one or more of his assistants because either they're yelling something out at him or he's communicating back and forth with them? There's quite a bit of communication like that, even in game between all of them, I'm assuming, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, a part of that is, honestly, it's Quinn looking back and saying, hey, remember that play, mark that play, that's film we're going to show at halftime or after the game. That's a play, you know, every halftime, more or less, they bring up 5-10 plays and they try to go through some quick film and make adjustments that way. So some of that's that, but yeah, I do think it's, I mean, and Tony Lang and Brad have, and certainly Alex have been, you know, it seems like they've got a good working relationship. I think I've seen them clash at different times. You could tell sometimes the guys are around each other for so long over the course of the season that, you know, I've seen them get, you know, rubbed the wrong way from time to time. But by and large, you know, I think it's a really nice working relationship that they have. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the staff over a year or two and who's around. And you know, I do wonder if Quinn will be. And I honestly don't know the answer. I'm just thinking aloud whether he would make changes if he had his complete druthers. Like I said, I still don't. I was never expressly told this, but I don't think he had 100% obviously control over picking the staff. So I think it'll be interesting to see what happens in the coming years when obviously he's, you know, more entrenched and he's got more head coaching experience and certainly more, you know, trusted, as it were. I just think it aloud. I think that will be interesting to see who's around still.
Yeah, I remember some of the talk radio guys talking about how they didn't think Quinn was giving carte blanche on his staff because he retained so many of the older coaches.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's pretty apparent when you think about that logically.
I wanted to shift a little into the news this week that Greg Miller Taylor is stepping down as CEO. I've heard a lot of people's reactions saying this isn't going to change much. Do you see it changing anything?
I mean, you know, I saw that kind of that thought too, that you know, people wondering or worrying or whatever that you know, this was setting up a sale or something, and you know, it's pretty hard to say what will happen in 10 years, 20 years, right? But I mean, at the moment, everything I've been told is that particularly the Jazz side of things will be business as usual, that this is by and large you know, paper change, that you know, the Millers will still, I reported that they will still be the ones that sign off on player acquisitions, big moves, things like that, and then a lot of it will be left to Dennis Lindsay and to Randy Rigby and those guys to do sort of the more menial day to day things. I don't know. I don't get the sense that there's some huge, you know, franchise altering impact, but it's, I mean, this is a day old for me. So I really don't have that really mapped out of my mind just yet. But from everything that I've been told from multiple people, this is not a huge deal in terms of basketball in Salt Lake City. You know, elsewhere in the Miller Company, I couldn't tell you, you know, what this does to the price of a Toyota, but.
All right.
Yeah, it makes me think a little bit, because through it all, you had Jazz Nation just about lose it. And I don't know how much you saw come across your timeline. I saw a little bit, and I know, you know, Devin was over here pointing fingers too. I mean, I think we saw some things where people were just freaking out. Suddenly Seattle Supersonics came up, everything like this. But I think the thing everybody forgets is that CEO wasn't just CEO of the Jazz. I mean, Greg was CEO of the entire Larry H. Miller Corporation. And there is more than just the Utah Jazz involved in that situation.
I pulled it up. Brian Smith, I think it was 2011, did a kind of a big package, big takeout on Larry H. Miller Group. And at one point in that story, Greg says that if the Jazz were, if you're just looking at it, you know, if they were a Toyota dealership, they'd be the fourth. They'd only be the fourth in revenue. They have three Toyota dealerships that make more, that bring in more revenue than the Jazz. And then he says when you look at profitability, it's even less than that. I mean, the Jazz are obviously the most public entity in the LHM group, but there are 80 companies, 80 plus companies, and obviously a ton more, you know, that probably bring in higher dollar amounts. I mean, someone was going to hear this and say, well, you know, that the Millers sometimes make it sound like the Jazz aren't profitable or that it's bad to own a team. I don't necessarily know I don't mean to say that. I just mean that, you know, they make more money doing lots of other things probably.
Exactly. And I remember an article done by ESPN some years back too, that talked about the fact that Larry built the Jazz organization as it is to be one, if not the only, self-sustaining organization in the NBA. You're talking about a team that relies on, I mean, that just, it circulates its own money. If they won't take money from other places if they don't have to. The Jazz is a self-sustaining organization, and it's one of those that they can keep separate if they had to.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, Larry seemed to also say that, you know, this was something that was, that the Jazz were kind of I don't want to say a community service, but certainly, you know, he felt the team was a community treasure in a way, and that, yeah, you know, there are things that have greater profit margins, but this was important to him because it was so important to, you know, everyone in Salt Lake City and Utah. And I get the sense, you know, I mean, in the brief interactions I've had with Greg, that that certainly still means something to him. I mean, I think his father's, the memory and his wishes in life still kind of linger over, how Greg would handle, any major things involving the franchise or, Greg or Gale or whoever. And when he hired Quinn, Greg was very, clear and kind of told a personal story that, just said of how much he thinks about how important it would be to win a ring for his father. So, I mean, in terms of, the Seattle thing and worst case scenario for Jazz fans in Utah, I just don't see that that's something that they are even, contemplating at the moment. Again, things change all the time, but right now, I mean, they've expressly said this is, nothing's going to happen in terms of relocation or anything major, that this is just going to be, the Jazz will be the Utah Jazz for a long time.
Bringing it back to the team, this is your second year. Which players' progress has surprised you the most between last year and this year of the guys who were on the team last year?
I mean, Rudy.
John, that's a trick question, isn't it?
I'm impressed, I've said, even I guess Rudy certainly the last little while has been insane, and before that, I probably would have said Gordon, just because. He didn't have to make the leap that he made this year. If he'd signed that max deal and was still shooting whatever he was shooting from three last year and his numbers are up obviously this year, he's more efficient this year. And if he didn't do those things, you might have said, hey, we knew what what he was when you signed him to that deal. And I think that it's certainly impressive because obviously the bigger your numbers get, it's like, it's much, much harder to improve those margins. Right. I mean, to go from it's probably easier in some respect to go from a 10 point score to a 14 point score than it is to go from an a 16 point score to a 20 point score, a game score, I should say. And so Gordon and Favors, just their steady climb has been pretty impressive, I would say, and not necessarily something I thought was completely evident, at the end of what happened last year. And then just the fact of the matter is that Rudy's been a monster. I mean, I know he didn't get a lot of time last year. When he did, he sometimes looked very awkward and very unprepared, right? I mean, maybe he could have figured that out if he had gotten more minutes and extended run over the course of that season. But to make the leap that he made, I mean, that management didn't see him making this leap that he's made this year. And it obviously opened up the door for that trade. I mean, if he didn't make that jump, would they have felt as comfortable trading Ennis? I don't know. But he has, and he's probably the most important player on that team right now and for the franchise. And I've had several people outside the organization say that. He's the most important player in the franchise right now.
Well, and we'll go. I'll come back to Gobert and including the Jazz here in a second, because you made some points about the drastic changes he made and even the team. But I want to get back to Hayward for just a minute. Have you noticed would you say that the biggest change that Hayward's had, obviously the numbers in game, the percentages, his stats, everything like that. Would you say that his biggest change that's maybe contributed to all of that is his maturity?
I think there is a component of that for sure. I mean, there's probably, some very natural things. I mean, he's a bigger, stronger dude than he was a year ago or 2 years ago. I mean, he's put in that work and just kind of, the natural biology of, someone that age is, you're going to get a little stronger, a little bit bigger. But also, yeah, I mean, I think that he's a believer in what Quinn's doing, and you know, there were a lot of times last year it didn't look like guys were believers in what Ty wanted to do. I mean, I think they all liked Ty on you know, some level, and I don't think there was any sort of, by any means, you know, mutiny or really like bad blood in the locker room. But I don't think that all of those guys necessarily bought into that vision. And Quinn certainly, I mean, I think they're, you know, I mean, you think about what Gordon was doing. Gordon came from Brad Stevens, whom he, you know, loved, had, you know, a brief time with Jerry Sloan, and then he's to Ty and maybe doesn't have that same relationship and doesn't maybe have that same trust. And I think he's starting to develop that, you know, who's probably unlikely he'll ever have a coach that he trusts and believes in more than Brad Stevens, but maybe, I mean, maybe. And I think that he's naturally kind of building up that relationship with Quinn. And I think that has had certainly an impact on his game and his performance and how connected he is every night right now. I mean, he's been pretty damn good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, every time I think about it, I think back to, not, you know, two off seasons ago when the Jazz pulled him into the office and said, look, you're our leader. And, you know, you were with him last year. You saw what went on with Ty. It seemed like for a while there, Gordon was shell-shocked having to carry the team the way he did. And that's where I think attributed to his growth too, was having that year where he had to carry quite a bit on his shoulders. I mean, last year he had to carry a lot. I mean, I don't know if what you saw of that, but, you know, like you said, now he's built a trust with Quinn, and it seems like that weight from last year is off of him now, and he's able to play a little more free.
Yeah, I think, and I think you're spot on that. I mean, a year of doing whatever your job is, you know, you're going to have a better understanding and more confidence, and probably an improved ability to do it, you know, in year two. And I mean, I can't imagine, you know, he was the focal point of basically every game plan for a while, for most of those games last year, you know, and didn't have a ton of, you know, great weapons around him. You know, Derek obviously wasn't the scorer that he is this year, even last year. And you know, when you're basically relying a lot on Richard Jefferson.
And I think that's one thing that the Jazz fans have to appreciate, is that the Jazz aren't investing that time in veteran players like they were last year. They're bringing in guys like they did this year with Bryce Cotton and signing him to a multi-year deal. How do you see him playing into the Jazz future, or just, I mean, for the rest of this season and even going forward from there?
Quinn was talking yesterday, basically just how much he liked that, you know, Bryce is somebody that hasn't really been given things. He's had to work. I mean, I know he's only less than a year away from, you know, when he was undrafted in last June, but, you know, certainly had to play through the D League, had to, you know, go through all those workouts. He wasn't going to be, you know, he probably knew he wasn't going to get drafted. And so he appreciates the kind of the work ethic. And then, like I said, shooting, this is a team that needs shooting. I mean, against Charlotte, obviously everybody could hit, but that's not really the norm for this team. Right. I mean, that was an exceptional night. So they like that. And, you know, again, they had some cap space, and it's a chance to continue to work with somebody and have a guy that you like, at least some, you know, locked into your training camp next year. And you get a, you know, another summer to work with him, and maybe he turns into, you know, your third point guard for sure, and you feel very comfortable with it. But he seems like in Providence, he was a great scorer, outrageous scorer. And in that game in Denver that he came in, he certainly looked very comfortable. He didn't look out of sorts at all. And so I think they just appreciate his readiness and like I said, his shooting especially.
Yeah, Jazz have brought over like 22 guys this year on the team, and it's just interesting to see which ones actually stick for the season. What do you think this means for Ian Clark? I see that they called him up today, but
I think part of that is at least Millsap being out with a concussion for a couple of days. It sounds like I was told possibly up to a week. But, you know, Ian, they obviously like Ian, and Ian's, from by all accounts, hard worker, good in practice, that sort of thing. But maybe a touch small, and maybe not a true point guard, and too small to be a two. I mean, he obviously hasn't broken into that, wasn't able to break into that rotation. So I'd be a little surprised to see Ian on the team next year, just because I think they're in a mode where they're looking to start to upgrade at some spots that they can. But, you know, I mean, obviously they had some belief in him to give him that deal in the summer. And, you know, he's played in 20 games this year. I know it's not a ton of minutes, obviously, but, you know, Quinn's been very complimentary of him when he has, when he has played. So I don't see necessarily a long-term future, but I've been wrong on a lot of things before.
Jazz were scheduled to have their only ESPN game tomorrow night.
And now it's just a really bad deadline.
Yeah.
Now it's just a horrible 8:30 home game.
That's right. That's right. Ooh.
I
complained loudly to them, but they said that, 8:30 was already printed on the tickets and they didn't want people showing up.
ESPN just needs to pick it back up. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, right now would be a pretty good game for as many times as they showed the Lakers this year. You'd think they could flex back into this. Do you know what they dropped it for? I can't remember.
It's the Warriors and Hawks. I really don't blame them for.
A good reason.
That's not going to get picked back up.
Who wants to watch?
Clay rolled his ankle, so who cares, really? Right.
I was going to say, who wants to watch the Splash Brothers? Really? I mean, come on.
that was a pretty good decision, I would say. All things, even considering the current run.
Okay, and so I've got a question going forward. At the beginning of the season, John and I talked. I thought Jazz would reach 37 wins. Start the season, Jazz go nine straight losses there in November into December. Started rethinking that, but I thought, I'm staying with it. So now here we are towards the end of the season, and now there's a likely possibility they might even reach the 500 mark or maybe even a little better. What's the chances you think that happens?
Man, I mean, this run has been pretty impressive, and I'm a believer in what they've been able to do defensively. They're gonna drop some games, though. I mean, it can't just keep going, right? I mean, I'm just a negative Nancy here, but I don't know. I mean, before the season, I think I picked like 30. I can't even remember, honestly, because I'm so bad at predictions that I probably just made up a number. But Tony Jones, by the way, picked 36, and not to discredit your 37, but I think that was the luckiest. It's going to be the luckiest 36 of Tony's life, because I think he just fell backwards into this run right now. I mean, you look at what's going on, that 9-game losing streak. You're like, I mean, because even last year they had a stretch of 500, and you're watching that streak, and you're like, man, they might not have a stretch of 500 this year, right? They might not be able to do that. Yeah, I mean, I think it was reasonable to at least wonder. I appreciate your steadfastness and your resolve, because you're going to be spot on, probably. I mean, it's just been an incredible turnaround of late. I don't know. What, 16 games left, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
they've gone 13-3 in their last 16.
They're done with the East after this Wizards game.
Right.
They're done with the East after the Wizards. I couldn't tell you the home and away.
They've got the Kings twice. They've still got the Lakers. They've got some bad teams. They got the Timberwolves twice.
Yeah. Okay. So there are wins. I think, but I mean, yeah, they've got Portland though. They have a Dallas game left. They've got
still have Phoenix left.
Phoenix. They're OKC here, although the ever dwindling Oklahoma City Thunder roster. I mean, it would be outrageous, I think, if they got to 40 wins, but it's totally possible right now. I mean, it's play. I won't be surprised, regardless of what happens, unless they make the playoffs. If they make the playoffs, I will drop over. I'll be completely shocked. But lots of things would have to go into in their favor for that to happen. I mean, New Orleans won tonight. It's a near impossibility. So that's the only thing that's going to stun me right now. And the way that they've played is ridiculous. And if they hit a wall, you know, if shots all of a sudden weren't falling the way that they, you know, not even the way they did against Charlotte, but you know, they hit a cold stretch. I wouldn't be surprised to see them lose three in a row still. I mean, their defense aside, but 40-41, if they win 500, it's just outstanding. It's just an insane run. I mean, I'm not going to make a prediction because it will be so wrong. Whatever I say, pick something else.
Well, you know, if the Jazz were in the East, they'd be in the playoffs right now.
Absolutely. Well, they'd be in, they could have a seventh seed, I mean, depending on tiebreakers, right? I mean, Indiana has the same record today.
Hey, Aaron, this has been John's song all season long. Every time we have a show, he's always saying, if the Jazz were in the East.
I'm kind of just a small thing on this today, but I don't know, because I don't know if you heard it. Maybe just an interesting take on you know, the East West thing. But at the trade deadline, this was right after they traded Ennis. So keep in mind, you know, they still weren't necessarily in the spot they're in right now. Dennis said, I'm paraphrasing here, but you know, people always say, I wish we were in the East, and I feel the exact opposite, because you know, once we win in the West, we'll know we have a legitimate contender and not a pseudo contender.
Nice.
But that was pretty interesting, you know, but it's also, it's just having to deal with the reality of it. I'm sure they'd be ecstatic right now if they were in the East and had a chance to, especially the way they're playing. I mean, you know, they would be a awful seventh seed to meet up with right now in the East, you know, the way they're playing. So, yeah, so I mean, you know, maybe that's just Dennis Lindsay being stoic, but I do think there's some merit to that idea. I mean, and who knows? You know, I mean, it seems like they're much closer to having that contender than I certainly thought at the beginning of the season.
Well, the East has been so much worse than the West for so long. It seems like every year there's a lot more talk about, you know, do we reform the conference or the playoff structure? And this is going to be another year where the 9th, 10th, and 11th teams in the West are better than the 8th.
Sorry, my dog is barking. Yeah, dog. he sees something out the window, and he's a jerk. All right, sorry. Will you repeat that? I apologize.
Well, I'm just saying that the West has been better than the East for like 15 years now. And so every year there seems to be a little more talk about, do we reform the playoffs? Do we reform the conferences? Do you see anything getting closer as far as that goes?
I think Adam Silver is certainly, you know, if you want to see that done, he's probably the commissioner for you. I mean, he seems to be someone willing to shake up some things that have been held as kind of, you know, somewhat sacred, at least. It would be interesting. I mean, I'm not a huge believer in basketball rivalries. I mean, in terms of, you know, how much do I care if the Bulls and Wizards play or the Wizards and the Thunder play, you know what I mean? Like, I don't necessarily know that I care that much about that, but travel would be maybe an issue. I've seen some people suggest maybe doing like Major League Soccer did once upon a time, where, you know, it's more of a wild card spot regardless of conference for some final spots or something like that. I think it's certainly possible. I mean, and the momentum that it's the traction that it's received in the press it's received this year it feels like it, like something like that could happen. I mean, how quickly it could be still years away, but I think it's a real possibility. I don't think that that's something that's just, you know, a non-starter. I think that it's something that frankly we should be looking at, because at the end of the day, good basketball is going to be more profitable for this league than, you know, just basketball because it's sort of close to you. Right. I mean, you know, but I don't know. I mean, I think having the best teams in there makes sense on every level, basketball, financial, it just makes sense. I do think that, especially if it doesn't change, because it hasn't changed, but I think it's something that they'll seriously consider.
Well, and John, I'd even go further. I'd say it's gone beyond 15 years. I mean, even the years that Jordan won the title back in the mid 90s, even when Houston went there, the West was better then. I mean, Houston Rockets, the Utah Jazz, the Spurs, the Lakers, you had teams in the West that were significantly better than just about everybody in the East during those years, except the Bulls. And that one year with the Pacers. So I think this goes 20 years or more back, where you haven't had the equality across the NBA board that maybe you had back in the 80s.
Yeah. It wasn't as annoying when Michael Jordan was around, though.
No, it wasn't. I think it was expected that Jordan would win because it was Jordan. But I mean, and everybody would hope, you know, that last year the Jazz went to the finals in 98, Jordan got pushed to the limit by Reggie Miller and the Pacers, went to seven games. I don't know why I'm saying eight, but seven games they went, and the Jazz had a week off. I mean, everybody thought all along, I mean, the West is so much better. The Jazz have home court. You know, Jordan gets pushed to seven, this should be fine. And look what happened. But you're right. It's gotten significantly worse since then.
Well, what's really bad is the 6th, 7th, and 8th seed. The 6th, 7th, and 8th seed weren't that different in the West and the East in the 90s. But you go over the past 10, 15 years, the 8th seed in the West is always better than the 6th seed in the East.
Yeah. No, you make a valid point. I agree. I agree that.
And the thing that's changed is the commissioner. I mean, I think that, you know, if you want some hope of a change there, that change and Adam Silver should probably be, that's good news for.
Absolutely. John, you got any
more?
We
should widen down with some fluff questions.
Yay. Fluff. What kind
Aaron,
of fluff?
What's your favorite team to watch besides the Jazz?
Favorite team to watch besides the Jazz. I mean, the Warriors have been just ridiculous this year, and to watch that kind of Steph, especially, I think that's probably my favorite right now. I mean, but then I'm also perverse. Like I'll watch a lot of the 76ers because it's on early. I like to be weird sometimes with it, but those are honestly probably the two teams I watch.
Do we?
Do we
hashtag the last statement you made with the hashtag Twitter after dark? Oh dear.
Yeah, that was for sure. But it's more like it's not even after dark. It's because it's so great because they're playing it like 4 in the afternoon, 5 in the evening, and I'm like, I'm here working in my sweatpants or whatever, my formal sweatpants, and you know, it's awesome.
So I'm gonna ask a question here about, you know, you're saying fluff question. Who's your MVP pick?
Oh man, this will change. I mean, it'll probably change, but I will still say that Steph right now. I mean, I know what Harden's done without Dwight, and I see what Westbrook's done, but that team is still, it's just so much, the Warriors are just so much better than everyone right now. and he's the best player. I mean, I don't know. I'm maybe that's just like so old school and like a traditional thought, but right now it's that's who it would be if I had to punch right now. I want a little bit more time to really ruminate and think about it, but that's my gut at the moment.
What's the last terrible movie you saw?
Ooh, the last terrible movie I saw. I'm so bad. I'm like much more of a like serial television watcher right now. I'm trying to think. I can't even remember the last movie I watched.
Well, what shows are you binge watching right now?
I'm also like slow to catch up, but honestly, like when you guys called me, I'm like in the final season of The Sopranos.
Nice.
Awesome.
So don't know spoilers, all right?
Everyone lives.
So John, maybe we should ask him when's the last bad TV show he watched.
Well, bad TV show all the way through. I mean, probably there's some frustrating episodes of Property Brothers that I watch from time to time where I think they make the wrong decision on the house. I don't know. I don't know. The last really bad TV show. Actually, I've blocked them all out.
Because if it's bad, you stop.
I know. Yeah.
Right. That's true. We won't bring Hallmark Devon into this. So that's okay because that's bad TV too. That's just horrible TV.
Yeah. I'm so far behind in my television that like basically the things I'm watching are almost universally acclaimed. I mean, maybe that speaks to me being lame, but like by the time I'm watching this, watching a show, it's like, it's probably beloved on some level, you know, like I've watched, I'm kind of going between Sopranos and then Parenthood. Have you guys watched Parenthood?
Oh yeah, I watched the first season of it.
It's actually really good. One of the guys from Friday Night Lights, the television show, was it's just really good. I like Parks and Rec, Community, various things, but I'm trying to think. I can't think of like just the last terrible, awful TV show I watched.
You bring up Parenthood, Devin. Devin could chime in on Parenthood because he loves Parenthood.
Yeah, to me that was one of the best shows on television. I'm bummed that it ended last season. So if you haven't seen the whole thing,
and I'm also not caught up. But it's heartfelt, and I can't imagine having children because I'd probably cry more than I do.
Devin doesn't have children, and he cried. I mean, you should have seen his Twitter meltdown the last episode. I mean, he lost it.
Devin, let's get together. Let's talk about this sometime.
Oh, okay. Boy, here we go.
See, someone understands what it's like to have emotions, Alan. Come on.
I got a feeling.
Oh.
What do you guys watching? Give me. Do you have a recommendation for me after whatever happens to Tony happens?
Well,
Justified.
Justified. Haven't done it.
Yep.
Well, and John's
it's in its final season now, so it's a good time for you to start.
Okay, Justified. And I sporadically watch Deadwood. I'm catching up on Deadwood too.
I love Deadwood.
John's got me hooked on House of Cards now too on Netflix.
And I haven't done that full season either. I'll tell you honestly, what I did stop watching was the Netflix Arrested Development season.
See, that's another one I got to watch.
I couldn't get into that. Yeah, the Fox series was good, but I could not get into the Netflix seasons.
Yeah, it didn't. Yeah, it wasn't the same. So that's one I started watching that and. Like did not complete and really don't have a strong desire to go back to right now.
Well, and if I tell you another show to get caught up on, I mean, John and I have talked about this on recent episodes too, is The Blacklist with James Spader.
Okay.
If you get a chance, I mean, that first season's on Netflix. I imagine the second season, when it's done, they'll probably put it on Netflix too, but it's worth a watch too. It's okay. Really good.
I haven't done that. I watched Homeland, the first season of Homeland, which I wanted to keep watching, but I also kind of deeply hated in a lot of ways. So those were as bad as I can really remember at the moment. Like, so many other things are going to come flooding back to my mind as soon as we wrap this up, and I'll DM you guys some, just like, my gripes about all of modern television.
Hey, I've got a question for you, Aaron.
Sure thing.
What have you been listening to lately? I don't know what your musical style is, but I'd be curious what you listen to out on the road.
I listen to a lot of different things. I mean, today, the last album I listened to was a band called The Hold Steady. And probably the one before that, I listened to an old Rilo Kiley album. But I kind of just shuffle the old iTunes. But the last couple of days I listened to full albums. So those were the last two albums I listened to.
I have no idea who any of those artists are. That's just not fair, Devin.
Well, Alan's got some homework by the time we have our next podcast, so.
Wow. Mind blown.
I'm pretty bad. I used to, I mean, like, those are all, like, I'm listening to them because they're bands I listened to when I cared about finding new bands, and now, like, I'm really far behind. I don't get any new stuff. I mean, I don't know anything new. Somebody like told me to listen to something new, and I was like, I don't know. I'm an old man in a lot of ways.
I've run into the same thing. I used to have new music. It seemed like every week there'd be a new album coming out that I just had to have. And anymore, mm-hmm. I find myself listening to things from 10 years ago, you know, that were cool then, and I still think it's cool now. So I definitely feel you there.
Absolutely.
All right. John, you got anything else you want to ask?
We probably ought to wrap up. Aaron's been very generous with time as we tried to figure out how to get this thing started.
Yes, he has. And Aaron, we do appreciate your patience with us tonight. So,
of course. Thanks. It was fun. Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
You bet. And we'll look forward to, you know, reading more of you as the rest of the season progresses. And then obviously, you know, as we prepare for what we hope to be a big off season and a big season next year. So,
sure thing.
All right. So that wraps up another edition of Jedi and the Germs. You can find us on Twitter at Jedi and Germs, at Jedi Zog, or at Germs Guy. Download us on iTunes and Stitcher. Leave us a comment, rate us, give us good ratings. We need those. And thank you for listening as always. And of course, thanks to Devin Masters at Torn by Devin for always putting together a great production with the show. Again, we want to thank Aaron Falk for joining us on the Jedi and Germs show. We look forward to y'all next week. Have a good night, John. Take us out.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.